Hi, my name is Dave Emery. This is Football Record Program number 1313, Conversation number 4, Monty. This is being recorded on June 8th of the year 2024. And once again, it is my pleasure and my privilege to bring back to our airwaves my new co-host, Monty, the next generation of researchers. And I am not in any way engaging in flattery. When I say that when Monty is presenting his research, I consider myself to be a student. Monty, we were talking about some of the historical and political foundation of the Prince Max Egan von Hohenlohe, Boas Schoenberg, Wynn Scott relationship, going all the way back to the World War I period. And that is the reason why I presented the information about Polanco, because we don't think about aristocracies in this country, and we don't think about the profound role that they have played in our history. And when we look at Prince Max Egan von Hohenlohe, who married into the Spanish wing of the Habsburg family, he also comes from the Sudetenland in Czechoslovakia, had profound links with the Škoda arms manufacturer there. And so once again, Monty, welcome back to our airwaves. Let's plunge right back in. If you could refresh us as to the source from which you are reading.
Yes, sir. The source I'm reading from is the London Review of Books. It is an article reviewing the book The Go-Betweens for Hitler by Karina Urbach. And I should note, I'm not reading directly from the book The Go-Betweens from Hitler. I'm reading from a review of the book that encapsulates the spirit of it, written by Richard J. Evans, who is Regius Professor of Emeritus of the History of History at Cambridge University and the former president of Wolfson College. And he published a three-volume history on the Third Reich with a special emphasis to the aristocracy of Queen Victoria and her extended family members' connections to the Third Reich. And if I may continue with that.
Absolutely.
The Duke of Coburg continued to visit the British royal family even after he had received the former king, now the Duke of Wisner, on a visit to Nazi Germany in 1937. During his visit, the Duke rendered the Nazi salute with practiced and enthusiastic arm and was lionized by the grandees of the Third Reich. Kohlberg also headed up the German-English Society in Germany, purging it of all of its non-Jewish members purging it of all of its non-Nazi members and its Jewish members, and was closely involved with its counterpart in London, the Anglo-German Fellowship, whose president was the president of J. Henry Schroeder Bank in London, Frank Tarkas. He had several conversations with George VI during the Munich crisis and may well have helped persuade him to back the deal that forced Czechoslovakia to let itself be dismembered by the Nazis. The king was obliged to accept his advisor's warnings not to welcome Neville Chamberlain when he arrived at the airport brandishing a worthless piece of paper he claimed to be a guarantee for peace in our time, but he still appeared with him on the palace balcony. The full truth about these matters won't be known until the relevant papers are released by the Royal Archives. As an editorial note, Dave, I don't believe that'll ever happen, but continuing. Was the German Foreign Office indulging in wishful thinking when it referenced and referred to the sympathetic attitude of George VI to the Third Reich? Does he and his family's correspondence with their German relations merely indicate that they weren't ardent supporters of appeasement, like so many other members of the political class in Britain, or did they become, as the title of Richard Griffith's illuminating book on the subject puts it, fellow travelers of the right? Given the passionate commitment of George VI and Queen Elizabeth to the Allied cause and the crucial role they played in bolstering morale during the Blitz by staying in London and visiting bombed-out families, why are the Royal Archivists so afraid of opening up their files for public inspection? Secrecy fans' suspicion. Others had a much clearer agenda. Lord Halifax Chamberlain's foreign secretary emerges from Urbach's book not as a clever fox, but a man completely out of his depth when it came to dealing with dictators. During the Munich crisis, Halifax made extensive use of informal channels of communication provided by a network of the high aristocracy. In a meeting arranged in July 1938 by another go-between, the Hungarian Stefanie von Holonoy Waldenberg Stielenfast. I should note this Princess Stephanie von Holonoy is the wife of Egan Max von Holonoy. Continuing. In a private meeting arranged in July 1938 by another go-between, the Hungarian Stephanie von Holonoy Waldenberg Stielenfast, Halifax, is reported to have said, "I, as the English Foreign Secretary, aim to get so far in my lifetime that one day the Fuhrer will be seen entering Buckingham Palace at the side of the King of England and the acclamations of the English people." Princess Stephanie, who enjoyed Hitler's confidence, was awarded a Nazi medal in the 1930s for her work, had arranged for the Duke of Wisner's visit to Germany, and she was astucious enough in cultivating significant figures in the British establishment, notably the newspaper magnate and supporter of fascism, Lord Rothermere of the London Times, who greeted a Munich settlement by writing a gushing telegram to Hitler, praising him as Adolf the Great. One of Stephanie's relatives by marriage, Prince Max Egan zu Holonoy-Lannenberg. I should note for our listening audience, this is the exact same Prince Egan Max von Holonoy that is mentioned inside of the Raymond Roca document as being the CIA's principal agent in the Mexico City station in 1963 and being directly involved in the murder of President Kennedy. Continuing. One of Stephanie's relatives by marriage, Prince Max Egan zu Holonoy-Lannenberg, also lobbied furiously for the interests of the Nazi leadership in Germany, particularly Hermann Göring, commander of the Luftwaffe and creator of the Gestapo, whose passionate for hunting kept them in close contact with the German and Austrian high aristocracy. With connections to the British royal family, Prince Max Egan von Holonoy had access to London society and used it to promote the cause of the Sudeten Germans in 1938, feeding the Foreign Office mandarins like Vanstadt and intelligence officers like Group Captain Malcolm Christie with Nazi propaganda disguised as independent opinion. Prince Egan von Holonoy was rewarded with his mission, headed by Lord Russenmann, who went to Czechoslovakia and met with the Sudeten Nazi German leader Konrad Hielin in his castle. Rumensohn had spent nearly all of his time in Germany residence in the Sudeten German nobility, so he heard nothing but complaints about the way they were treated by the Czech government. Chamberlain was able to use Rumensohn's report, suitably edited, to back up his successful call for the region to be seceded to Germany. Max Egan von Holonoy and Princess Stephanie Holonoy-Habsburg had done their bit for the Third Reich. As Urbach concludes, the Munich Agreement was not just a great victory for Göring and Hitler, it was a great victory for Holonoy and the Habsburg aristocracy, end quote.
That's very important to remember. Also remember something from the Nazis Go Underground back to at least 1944, another book for download on the Spitfire website. Neville Chamberlain wasn't a dupe, unquote. He was a protege of Sir Montagu Norman, head of the Bank of England, who funded Hitler. He also, Chamberlain, that is, was a major investor in Imperial Chemicals, which had a powerful cartel agreements with IG Farben. So he had skin in the game, so to speak. And in light of what the Nazis did, the term skin has a brutal sub-meaning. Go ahead, Bobby.
On that note, I'd like to pivot rather dramatically to information that is, as I stated earlier, has only but recently come to my attention about Sofindis and what it represented for the Third Reich in terms of Prince Max Egan von Holonoy being the top purchasing agent for the Third Reich in Spain, information that we covered in the previous program from the British National Security Action documents. If I may expound on what SOFINDUS was and what it represented.
Well, please do, and bear in mind the broader political and historical environment within which Prince Max Eger von Hohenlohe operated slash figures. Go ahead, Bobby.
So this is information that I'm actually gleaming directly from CIA archives on the commander of SOFINDUS, a man by the name of Johannes Bernhardt. His full name is, at least the spelling inside of CIA documents, and I certainly have seen it spelled differently, but his name is spelled in CIA documents as J-O-H-A-N-N-E-S, Johannes, last name Bernhardt, B-E-R-N-H-A-R-D-T. Johannes Bernhardt.
By the way, Monty, also do refresh briefly for the audience what SOFINDUS was, because that's not a household name, and yet it is profoundly important.
Of course. So reading from, once again, this is Central Intelligence Agency documents from the CIA.gov reading room on Johannes Bernhardt's, and this is document number 13 in his 201 file. I know I've said this on several occasions before, but I'd like to stress to the listening audience, a 201 file is a personnel file, and 201 files are only opened if the asset is working for the Central Intelligence Agency. So Johannes Bernhardt, as commander of SOFINDUS, later became a full-fledged CIA operative. But once again, this is from the informal biographies of Johannes Bernhardt. This is from CIA document number 13. Dave will include a link in the Spitfireless website on this. And but you can find this in Johannes Bernhardt's document number 13, CIA 201 file. And I'll read it directly, if I may, Dave.
Sure, go ahead.
Subject is an officer of the SS, meaning Johannes Bernhardt. Reading again, subject is an officer of the SS, his rank being Gruppenführer or Oberstammführer. I should note that those ranks are colonel and general, respectively, Gruppenführer and Oberstammführer. Reading again. Subject is an officer of the SS, his rank being probably either Gruppenführer or Obersturmbannführer. He is a native of German, born 1 January 1897 in Oslut, East Prussia. At the outbreak of the Spanish Civil War in 1936, Bernhardt, who was then living in Spanish Morocco, offered his services to Francisco Franco, a personal friend of his. It was arranged that the subject, meaning Bernhardt, would handle the exchange of Spanish products for German war materials, the holding companies of which were Roach, Roach and Berlin and Hiesma and Tutran were set up as the purpose and became the most important economic factors on the nationalist side. Reading the titles of those companies again, R-O-W-A-K, Roach, and Hiesma, H-I-S-M-A. And those roughly translate into, in terms of their English spelling, that would be the Sociedad Hispania Mecua de Transportes, or Hiesma, which roughly translates into English, Spanish Moroccan Transport Company. And in a sense, it was a Spanish-German dummy company set up by Nazi Germany through Johannes Bernhardt to supply the nationalist faction of the Spanish Civil War, during which the capital of the Spanish protectorate of Morocco, Tutran, constituted the actual founding of the company. Okay? So it was run through the Spanish Protectorate of Morocco and Algeria, and ultimately the front entity in Germany was Roach. And a little bit of the background on that can actually be gleaned from these CIA documents. Reading, SOFINDUS business networks were expansive. In addition to operations in Spain and Morocco, Johann Bernhard oversaw operations in South America, particularly Argentina and France. One of the most important roles of Sofindis was the delivery of vital mineral resources from Spain, Morocco, Portugal to the Third Reich. Foremost in this operation was wolframite, or tungsten, a material that was vital to the production of armor-piercing ammunition for fighter planes and tanks. The Sofindis delivery of wolframite had to be protected by Germany at all costs. The war could not be fought without this critical material exclusively supplied by the Sofindis network. Continuing with the CIA document. In 1938...
So if you remove Sofindis from this equation, the Third Reich, because they will not be able to produce armor-piercing shells, will not be able to fight. Go ahead.
Correct. And then once again, I would stress, this is from a CIA document, basically demonstrating that, correct, Dave, if you remove Sofindis from the Third Reich's war machine, they have no war. So continuing. In 1938, Sofindis, the Soledad Financier Industrial de RAV, which roughly translates into the Society for Financial and Industrial Procurement, replaced the earlier corporations. As managing director of Sofindis in Madrid from at least 1941, Johann Bernhard collaborated closely with both SIPO, the SD, and the ABWER. Under his direction, Sofindis, in addition to serving as a purchasing agency for Wolfstrom and other strategic commodities, handled foreign exchange transactions between the German government and German intelligence services, provided cover employment for SIPO and SD agents in Spain and North Africa, and sometimes paying a part of their salaries, facilitated the granting of the Spanish visas to ABWER agents in Central America and South America by promising employment, set up bank deposits, probably in Spanish names, to provide for their ABWER expenses in Central and South America. In the case of a diplomatic break between Spain and Germany, and assisted the German intelligence services in other ways. Specifically, Johann Bernhard is known to have handled a transfer by Sofindis to the German embassy in Petras of 16 million Deutschmarks for Francisco Franco's personal use in November of 1944. I'll read that again. Johann Bernhard, specifically known to have handled a transfer by Sofindis of 16 million Reichsmarks to Francisco Franco's personal bank account in November of 1944. Between October of 1944 and 1945, Johann Bernhard collaborated with the German embassy, their naval attachés in Spain, particularly Hermann Goering's attaché, Prince Egon von Hollenoy. End quote.
Oh, that boy did get around, didn't he? Plus, we could perhaps do a modern fascist iteration of the old sitcom All in the Family here. when we see someone like Prince Max Egon von Hohenlohe networking on behalf of Schellenberg of the SD and with Dulles, it was simply one star in the constellation of European aristocratic building with the forces of Nazism and fascism. It was by no means something that was an outlying event. And in turn, when we see these events shifting to Latin America, to Mexico City, when Scott's networking with Prince Max Egon von Hohenlohe in the immediate World War II period, then the Los Tecos, then with von Hohenlohe in Mexico City and working as a Nazi agent, and according to Roca, in the milieu of the Kennedy assassination, these things are not happenstance. They're not, well, that's weird, dude. The reason why we are going into this, and granted, with this may have some of the listeners' eyes crossing, is because this is the background. This is the foundation. This is the landscape and environment within which All of those things exist. Go ahead, Navi. Thank you.
So I'd like to jump back in the documents. We were just reading from CIA document, Johann Bernhardt's document number 13. I'd like to jump back to document number 1, if I may. So this is the same series of documents. However, instead of document 13, we're reading from document number 1. This is page 10 of document number 1 of Johann Bernhardt's CIA 201 file, if I may, David.
Sure.
Okay, so page 10, reading. Let's see. This is reference material to Johann Bernhardt within the CIA. Reading. During the Spanish Civil War, engaged in arms traffic to France. So the person they're referring to here in this document is Johann Bernhardt. So I'll read that again. During the Spanish Civil War, Johann Bernhardt was engaged in arms traffic to France. Very clever. He has been employed to deal directly with Francisco Franco, who likes him. He has made a considerable sum of money, married the daughter of Wilmers. Within 8 years, he acquired money and title. So I should note that the Wilmers that's being mentioned here is Ramon Augusta Garrett of Wilmer, who at the time was the I guess you could say foreign minister to the Third Reich. So Johann Bernhardt's actually married the daughter of the Spanish foreign minister to the Third Reich in 1938. Continuing. Within 8 years, he has acquired money and titles. He now has a villa in Madrid and two large farms, one in Salamanca, the other in La Cinta. His connections are powerful, although he is number one on the list of expulsions demanded by the Allies. He has never left the country. Gives the cover of Sofindis to the services of German intelligence service. The subject, meaning Johann Bernhardt's, reading again, in 1936, the subject received financial assistance from the German government to form Hisa Import Export Company. In 1939, he was chief of the Spanish-German Claims Commission, and since that time, he has supervised the investing of 24 billion Reichsmarks in the Spanish industry. I'll read that again, Dave. In 1939, Johann Bernhardt was made chief of the Spanish-German Claims Commission, and since that time, he supervised the investing in 24 billion Reichsmarks in Spanish industry. He is a personal friend of Hermann Göring. His principal assistants are Herbert and Oscar Wilmer. Heinrich Rau, who said he was in Puerta de Sol, wrote to his wife and asked her to go to the subject and explain to him that he has to get out of jail. Bear in mind, these documents were circulated in 1945 when Johann Bernhardt was being interrogated by the Army Counterintelligence Corps operatives in the occupied sector of France. Continuing, the subject... once again, this is Johann Bernhardt that we're talking about. Subject is included on a list of OP6 representatives and agents in Spain. After his name is a comprehensive economic organization. In Spain, one of the big tasks was to supply the French Atlantic ports still occupied by the Germans with food. Almost all the sailing boat expeditions succeeded. It was managed by Johann Bernhardt's and his embassy contact, Prince Egan von Hohenlohe, end quote. So, essentially what we have here is a man in Johann Bernhardt says, Commander of Sofindis, Dave, investing 28 billion Reichsmarks into Spanish industry, and he personally supplied all of the food for the occupation forces in Normandy before the Normandy invasion.
So he basically requisitioned the food that was to be used by the occupation forces in Normandy. We just observed, well, the 80th anniversary of the Normandy landings was just observed. And yet the food that was going to be nourishing the anti-fascist landers at Normandy Beachhead was being provided by Sofindis.
Well, I should say the fascists that were at the beachhead in Normandy. Yes, completely supplied by Sofindis and.
Because so it was the people that were fighting against were being nourished by Sofindis. I see. Thank you for clarifying that.
Correct. The Waffen SS and Nazi forces that were at Normandy during Operation Overlord, you know, the now famous D-Day operation of 6 June 1944, the food that was being provided to all of the Nazi occupying forces in Normandy was being provided directly by Johann Bernhardt and Prince Egon von Hohenlohe.
So Prince Hohenlohe is providing the food for the forces against whom the heroes who landed and met us both by boat and via parachute in Normandy were fighting. Basically, they were fighting people. They were fighting forces that were being nourished by Sofindis and by Prince Max Egon von Hohenlohe.
Correct.
Wow. Again, that's a footnote to the Normandy landings that I will guarantee you Joe Biden won't tell us about and will not appear in the New York Times. I don't think we'll be hearing about that from Steven Spielberg or Tom Hanks either.
No, not at all. Or the fact that this same man who was nourishing the fascists, as you pointed out, you know, many a brave allied, soldiers, including the Rangers who were massacred, the United States Army Rangers that were massacred at the Maisie Battery in Omaha Beach. Yes, the nourishment, the food in the bellies of the fascists that were fighting at Normandy was provided by Johann Bernhardt's Sofindis and Prince Max Egon von Hohenlohe. But
now, those were the ones who landed, I believe it was called Pointe du Hoc, and they supposedly were going to spike some Axis guns, which dominated the beachhead, and they incurred very heavy losses, only to arrive at the top of a cliff to find out that the batteries had been moved.
Right, that's the infamous Maisie Battery, of which the second Rangers that landed at Omaha Beach were slaughtered. The entire battalion of the second Ranger Regiment was slaughtered at the Maisie Battery at Point the Hawk. So
by people being fed by, among others, Prince Max Egan von Hohenlohe.
Correct, correct.
There's an example of what I call food for thought and bounce for the research. Go ahead.
Continuing with the CI document, once again, this is document number one in Johann Bernhardt's. This is I'm skipping down to page 11 and talking about the general manager of the day-to-day activities of Johann Bernhardt Sofindis. I'd like to mention an SS officer by the name of Lieutenant Colonel, that's SS Obersturmbannführer Walter Mosig, last name spelled M-O-S-I-G, Mosig. So continuing with the document, if I may, Dave.
Absolutely.
Johann Bernhardt is a collector and pseudo-official foreign currency of gold, art dealer of the Reich and its former leaders. He became very rich in his service in Spain. Contrary to the statement on the interrogation report to the effect that the subject was the head of Greeley and was installed as general manager of Sofindis, POW states that Mosig was the head of Gridley and that Bernhardt had always been the general manager of Sofindis and that he founded the organization in 1938. Just to give some background as to what Gridley is, it was the liaison office that camouflaged Sofindis's activities through Opt 6 via the Blue Division of Franco's army overseen by General Muniz Grandes.
And the Blue Division, by the way, was a Spanish division that, among other things, fought on the Eastern Front in World War II.
Correct. So the intelligence service of the Blue Division was called Grille, spelled G-I-L-L-I-E, which was the cover organization for Sofindis. Reading in the document, the commander of that organization was SS Obersturmbannführer Walter Mosig, last name spelled M-O-S-I-G, and he was a personal attaché for Walter Schellenberg, commander of all Einsatzgruppen on the Eastern Front.
Wow. So Schellenberg, in addition to being in charge of foreign intelligence for the SD, had as part of his command duties, administering the Einsatzgruppen on the Eastern Front. Those were the mobile killing squads that followed the Nazi frontline troop. And, the war in Ukraine, the Einsatzgruppen Nachtigall, headed up by Roman Shukevich, liquidated the Jewish population of the city of Lvov, previously called Lemberg, in late June of 1941. Go ahead.
Now, here's the interesting thing about this document, Dave. I noted that the interrogation report was conducted through the economic staff of the Embassy of Madrid, 18 January 1946. So, just as a matter of interpolation, you know, I figured, well, it can't be that hard to find a Strategic Services Unit document because they're, in fact, all over the place. In the past 10 years, for the edification of your listening audience, SSU documents have been released in droves. Strategic Service Unit documents have been released in droves by the National Archives in the past 10 years via the Nazi War Crime Disclosure Act of 2005. So I was able to track down who exactly was the interrogating officer that oversaw the interrogation of Colonel Walter Mosig, who's the general manager of Sofindis and Walter Schellenberg's personal deputy in Spain. Bear in mind, Schellenberg was Max Egan von Hollenoy's, benefactor within Sokaverks during the Second World War. And this man is very interesting.
Now, the spelling of that, is that S-K-O-D-A?
Correct.
Again, and that, again, is a major, is still a major Czech armaments manufacturer. When Czechoslovakia was basically handed to the Third Reich, that gave them a profound munitions upgrade, so to speak. And today, Skoda is still in existence, still a major munitions maker owned by Rheinmetall Fanfare, Germany. Go ahead.
Right. So I'd like to track your audience through this once again. You know, essentially what I'm doing here is I'm backpedaling on the interrogation documents that were conducted by the Strategic Services Unit, and a team called the 7707 European Intelligence Center out of Oberstrugel in Frankfurt. The chief interrogator for Walter Schellenberg concerning Sofindis documents surrounding Schellenberg's deputy, Colonel Walter Mosig, was a man in the United States Army 7707 European Intelligence Center, a colonel in the United States Army by the name of Arnold Melvin Silver, last name S-I-L-V-E-R. Now, for some of you more astute listeners that have been tracking the previous three programs that Dave and I have put together, I previously mentioned that Arnold Melvin Silver was, in fact, in 1963, not only the CIA station chief in Luxembourg, but Arnold Melvin Silver was the commander of the QJ-WIN program and therefore a support officer for ZR Rifle Communications Intercept and Staff D Intercept programs in Mexico City. That is, in my opinion, Dave, most bizarre that the man that would oversee all of the interrogations of Colonel Walter Mosig, deputy director of Sofindis, and a personal attaché of Walter Schellenberg, in the form of Arnold Silver. Silver, in 1963, is the top recruiting officer for the CIA's Communications Intercept Program, ZR Rifle, which also included their executive action assassination capabilities.
That basically makes only too much sense, I think. Go ahead.
Well, on that note, I'd like to skip, well, not skip, but I'd like to jump forward to, a book called Ratline by Peter Lavenda.
And very good. And by the way, I've interviewed Peter about the book a couple of times. Go ahead.
Okay. So this is from page 60 of the book, talking about what exactly happened to Sofindis and what it was doing after the Second World War. So, and talking about Sofindis's key institutions after the Second World War, this is from Peter Lavenda's book, Ratline, page 60, quote, "It is worthwhile to note that the Allies had computed the amount of gold coming into Spain from Nazi Germany during the period of the war as more than 122 tons. Conservatively, other estimates put it at 200 tons of Nazi gold was sent to Spain during the Second World War. These calculations were based on records obtained by Sofindis and from trucking manifests out of Germany to Spain. The final disposition of the gold is unknown, but it would be worth more than 100 million U.S. dollars in 1945. Today, that gold would be worth $5 billion in 2024 money."
That is a nice chunk of change. Go ahead, Bobby.
So that's essential, according to Peter Lavenda's book, Ratline, on page 60, that's essentially what Sofindis is doing in the immediate post-war environment, and who is the top interrogator for Colonel Mosek, the deputy director of Sofindis. Once again, I will stress, Arnold Melvin Silver, commander of the CIA's QJ Win program, which oversaw the recruiting of agents for Staff D and ZR Rifle, the CIA's joint NSA communications intercept program. We have to automatically assume, and this is just an editorial note on my part, Dave, we have to automatically assume that Arnold Melvin Silver knew where this $100 million gold war chest went in 1945.
I think it's extremely unlikely that he didn't, and I think it's altogether likely that his position, probably in the immediate post-World War II period and subsequently, was at least in part derivative of that knowledge. Go ahead.
So continuing on Walter Mosek and some of his activities during the Second World War, I'd like to quote from a book called The Real Odessa by Unken Gonin, last name spelled G-O-N-I, first name spelled U-K-I. Unken Gonin, this is page 74 of The Real Odessa. And what I'm essentially going to be talking about here is what exactly happened to the SS officers and SD and Gestapo men that were working for the Sofindis Network and after World War II, and what exactly did they do to help establish the rat lines that were operating from Spain to Argentina? And I should note that reportedly, and once again, this is as a side editorial to Erkin Gonkin's book, The Real Odessa. As a side note, it should be noted that the Buenos Aires Frenchman, known as Charles Luceca, and the last name spelling on that is L-E-S-C-A, during the liberation of Paris, Charles Luceca took refuge in Germany before traveling to Franco, Spain, and he may have been one of Juan Perón's original ratline operatives, and as such, we're going to be looking at a little bit of his background, because Luceca was one of the founding members of Action Francoise, or CALGUA, and he was an asset of the Gestapo and the SD, working directly for the Vichy regime, and was a Sofindis operative between Spain, Argentina, and France.
And by the way, Juan Perón was the fascist dictator of Spain, who, along with his wife, Evita, were primary operatives of the Borman network there, and ultimately tried to double on the Borman network to their great dismay. Continue.
So reading again, this CALGUA French fascist, Charles Luceca, was, by all accounts, the originator of the Argentine rat lines that were being run through Spain for the SD and the Gestapo, and Sofindis Network was likely the front entity that helps set that up. And we infer, and I infer this once again, reading from the book, The Real Odessa by Erki Gunten.
Uki Gonin, I think his name is.
Oh, Gonin, correction. Uki Gonin. Last name spelled G-O-N-I, and this is from page 74. I'll read it in its entirety if I may, Dave.
Yes, very quickly. The Cagoule, it was the French fascist organization that established an abortive coup in 1938 to overthrow the Social Front of Léon Blum. And the Cagoule and other related organizations, such as the Croix de Feu, were key elements of the French Fifth Column that basically handed France over to the Germans. Go ahead.
Correct. So, reading once again, this is from page 74 of the book, The Real Odessa. Quote, the group often gathered in the exclusive Horsher restaurant on Alfonso 7th, reading again. The group often gathered in the exclusive Horsher restaurant on Alfonso 12th Street, installed there in 1943 by the Berlin restauranter Otto Horsch, with the help, according to American intelligence, of Walter Schellenberg. To open up his Madrid branch, Horsher allegedly transferred 250,000 Swiss francs out of Germany to Nazi diplomats in Lisbon, Portugal, and later converted the Swiss notes to pastistas on the black market, an exercise in money laundering allegedly organized by another Schellenberg agent who ended up in Argentina. Drum roll, please. Lieutenant Colonel Walter Eugene Mosek. Schellenberg reportedly also helped Horschek transfer furnishings and silverware from Germany. The original Horschek restaurant in Berlin's Kruntumstamm has been a regular meeting place for Third Reich hierarchy from Hermann Goering to Heinrich Himmler. Unknown to the most clients, it was planted secret microphones to capture the conversations of foreign visitors, end quote. So essentially what I'm describing here is that Walter Schellenberg, as the head of Risha, the foreign intelligence branch of the SD, was using the Sofindus network in a role in establishing the Nazi rat lines from Spain to Argentina. And that was established by a French collaborator and a member of Calgua, a man by the name of Charles Lescura.
Spell his last name again for us, if you would.
The spelling on that is L-E-S-C-A, Lescura.
Lescura, go ahead.
Continuing with The Real Odessa, and this is on page 69, so I'm backpedaling a little bit. Talking about Walter Schellenberg and another one of his Sofindus contacts who helped set up these rat lines, who was an Argentine-born Cinctorite Thinks asset by the name of Carlos Fuldner, last name spelled F-U-L-D-N-E-R. I should note that Fuldner was born to German immigrants in Buenos Aires, but he and his family returned to Germany in 1922, just as the Nazi Party was starting to take off. Fuldner would later join the SS in 1932 at the age of 21, but bizarrely, he was booted out of the SS in 1936 as allegations of fraud and disloyalty hovered around him. The charges were later cleared up in 1937, and by 1938, he reenlisted in the SS. But the next 7 years of his life are shrouded in mystery. So reading from The Real Odessa, page 69, by Unki Gonin, quote, apparently he had a close connection in Spain, serving as a lieutenant and a German-Spanish interpreter in the Blue Division, the corps of 20,000 soldiers sent by dictator Francisco Franco to fight alongside the Nazis on the Russian front. He returned frequently to Berlin. At some point, he joined the huge Nazi corporation Sofindus, which controlled widespread German business interests and provided cover and financing for Nazi agents in Spain. True to his character, Fuldner had created trouble for himself there and was dismissed for embezzlement. In the last months of the war, he traveled back and forth between Madrid and Berlin. An arrival by plane in Madrid was registered 26 November 1944 and then a return to Berlin in late December. But by that crucial Monday in March of 1945, he climbed down the German plane stepladder in Madrid. Fuldner, seems to have been restored to his former rank of colonel in the SS. He was now on a special mission for Heinrich Himmler's secret service, for which he carried his own German and Argentine passports, and to which he would add a particular brand of financial chenachery, which had distinguished his career. In the coming years, many of the Reich officials and some of the worst war criminals, including Adolf Eichmann, would owe their lives to the Argentine SS Captain Fuldner. Was Fuldner's mission the result laid planned by Schellenberg and Himmler? There is little precious documentation available even today about Fuldner's activities in Madrid and the immediate post-war period, but later activities suggest high-level Nazi involvement, end quote. It should be noted that Fuldner was more than anyone else managed to enlist Juan Perón, the Argentine dictator, and turn his country into a haven for Nazi war criminals. Of course, Adolf Eichmann being one of the men that was personally protected by Carlos Fuldner and his Sofundis contacts in Argentina.
You know, one of the things about the networks that you have been identifying, people will say, well, I don't believe in conspiracy theory or this and that. The bottom line is the big lie, as Adolf Hitler discussed it in Mein Kampf. So most people tell little lies. They would be ashamed to tell big ones. They would never credit others with such great impudence as the complete reversal of facts. Even explanations would long leave them in doubt and hesitation, as any trifling detail would dispose them to accept the thing as true. All good liars know this and therefore stop at nothing to achieve this. And, the official version, the reigning version, so to speak, of the death of Adolf Hitler was the book, The Last Days of Hitler, penned by Hugh Trevor Roper. And Roper did that when he was an agent of MI6, British Overseas Intelligence. And the writing of that book was an operation, a PSYOP. It was called Operation Nursery. And I think as we take a look at the profound links between industrialists, financial institutions, aristocracies on both sides of the Atlantic, and eventually we're going to get into some of the profound Asian connections as well. I think that Operation Nursery, basically, okay, little children, the nightmare is over, the bad man is dead, you can go back to sleep, and then they walk a by baby in the treetop, et cetera, et cetera. We all have been subjected to a larger Operation Nursery. And when we are presented with the quote facts unquote about World War II, about fascism, it is essentially a myth. It's Operation Nursery. It is intended to keep us asleep or put us back to sleep. And with the recently concluded observations of the 80th anniversary of the Normandy landings, once again, Operation Nursery, the larger application of the same, has come to pass. So when we see all these weird names, man, wow, you got this guy, Prince Max Eger von Hohenlohe, and he's a member of the Habsburg family, and he's in Spain, and he's working for Schellenberg, and he's meeting with Dulles, and then, wow, Max Eger von Hohenlohe is networking with Win Scott in the immediate aftermath of World War II, and then, wow, Max Eger von Hohenlohe appears to have been the Nazi that Jim Garrison may very well have been looking for. This courtesy of Lieutenant Colonel Ray Roca, James Jesus Angleton's deputy for counterintelligence for CIA, the acknowledged expert within the agency on the Kennedy assassination, and the man who concluded that Jim Garrison would get a conviction of Clay Shaw for the assassination of JFK, as portrayed in the movie JFK, as portrayed by numerous Garrison researchers, including the heroic Jim DiGiamio. This is all part of a larger milieu, my favorite word, that makes only too much sense and that basically is unfamiliar to us only because of the deliberate propagation of an enormous lie. And when people say, well, I don't believe in conspiracy theories, what we're really talking about is not conspiracy, although it is conspiratorial, obviously, but it is networking, networking between powerful elements over a long period of time, and networking that has been deliberately obscured to us by the larger application of Operation Nursery. Go to sleep, children. Don't worry about all these bad things. The bad people are either dead or they don't matter. So rock goodbye, baby, in the treetop, et cetera, et cetera. And what you're doing, Monty, is alerting those of us to the fact that, well, there's not really trouble in paradise. There's trouble in the nursery. Go ahead.
Well, I appreciate that, Dave. So in continuing with Walter Mossack, Carlos Flunder, and Charles Luseca, you know, these three operatives that are working for Walter Schellenberg within the Sofindis organization to not only move hundreds of tons of gold, you know, the equivalency of several $1 billion war chest for the Nazi intelligence service from Germany to Spain, but also setting up the rat lines that would protect some of the most notorious Nazi war criminals, including Adolf Eichmann, the man that oversaw the Final Solution plan for the extermination of all the Jews in occupied Europe. It should be appreciated that the Sofindis itself apparently was absorbed by Western intelligence in a very odd organization. Now, I'd like to make special note to the listening audience that the book I'm about to quote from, and I think we're going to end our broadcast here and pick it up at a later date. The book I'm quoting from is a point of controversy amongst researchers that have examined the assassination of President Kennedy, including yours truly. And that is a book by a retired Air Force major by the name of Ralph P. Gannis, last name spelled G-A-N-I-S. And that book is called The Skorzeny Papers. I should note that the reason why it's a point of controversy is because the book is purportedly based off of the personal letters and telegrams and musings of Otto Skorzeny and his wife, Elsie Skorzeny. But to this day, those documents have not been released by the author for one either legal or financial reason or another. You know, and that's my own editorial on that book. But I believe it's
I would just like to caution the audience. It would appear that Major Gannis is something of a Skorzeny fanboy.
Right.
So I would, right. I would be extremely careful. Go ahead.
However, on that note, he does provide some very interesting information as to what happened to Sofindis, at the end of World War II concerning the Allied controlled commissions and something called Operation Safe Haven, which was the absorption of Nazi front entities by the fledgling CIA and the post-World War II environment. So once again, I'm hesitant to use this book as a source, but it is a fascinating entry. This is from pages 147 and 148 of Major Ralph Gannis's book, The Skorzeny Papers. So if I may read it, Dave?
Absolutely.
Okay, quote, several months before the end of the war, Johann Bernhardt had secretly contacted British intelligence in an attempt to strike a deal with the Allies to turn over the Sofindis network. The Spanish government, which had investments in the company, had worked closely with German intelligence, was also involved in this secret agreement. As a result of these clandestine negotiations, Sofindis assets were eventually taken over by the Allied Control Commission, and as soon as the war ended, this was a joint operation in which the American corporate president was placed in charge of Sofindis assets with a British vice president. Also involved in the transfer of assets was reading again, also involved in the transfer of assets was the Spanish government, which negotiated control in Spanish industry tied to Sofindus. You know, bear in mind real quick as an editorial aside, the CIA documents, once again, it's a document number, 13 on Johann Bernhardt's, positively identifies at least 28 billion Reichsmarks were invested in Spanish industry by the Third Reich. Continuing with Gannis's book. Also involved in the transfer of assets was the Spanish government, which negotiated the control of Spanish industry tied to Sofindus. Under the agreement, former Sofindus network was rolled up in a government-controlled organization called the Instituto Nacional Industrial, or the Institute of Industry, or INI, under Juan Antonio Suárez, last name spelled S-U-A-N-Z-E-S. The acquisition was announced publicly, but details were not given, and the takeover of Sofindus was conducted in great secrecy. One clever move, U.S. and British intelligence had acquired the entire former SS intelligence network embedded in Sofindus. Subsequently, Sofindus companies were revamped and incorporated into a Panamanian holding company called World Commerce Corporation, formed by General William Donovan and operated by former Iberian OSS Station Chief and Madrid Station Chief Frank Ryan and Ricardo Sirek. Last name spelled on that is S-I-C-R-E, end quote.
And by the way, the World Commerce Corporation is one of those organizations, one of those names that is fundamental with a capital F to not only the immediate post-World War II history of the world, but to the world we inhabit today. So this might be a good time, Monty, to take a pause, wrap up our program today, and then we can resume this next week and further develop the evolution of institutions and networks that will help those of us in the audience, and to an extent I consider myself an audience member when you're presenting your research, to basically exit the nursery. Operation Nursery is slowly being negated by a revelation of the facts concerning the institutions and individuals in question here. So, Sofindus into World Commerce Corporation, and listeners to the program can use the search function on the SpitfireList.com website. And in fact, the introduction to anti-fascist books goes into the World Commerce Corporation. It uses the Google search engine, so open quote, World Commerce Corporation, close quote, will give you a running jump on what we are talking about.
And on that note, Dave, real quick before we go, I'd like to note that when we pick up in our next program, I'm going to be talking about specifically the chief of the OSS in the Iberian Peninsula, Ricardo Sirek, last name spelled S-I-C-R-E, and his involvement with an oil billionaire in Texas by the name of D.H. Byrd.
Aha, the guy who owned the Texas School Book Depository and the founder of the Civil Air Patrol.
Correct. So I'm going to be linking real quick for your listening audience, Max Egan von Holonoy, not only directly to Sofindus as we established today, but to World Commerce Corporation and Dryhole Byrd, owner of the Texas School Book Depository and founder of the Civil Air Patrol, effectively Lee Harvey Oswald's first place of employment and his last place of employment.
Fascinating. The alpha and the omega of Lee Harvey Oswald. This concludes For the Record program number 1330, conversation number 4 with Monty. This is being recorded on June 8th of the year 2024. For Monty, this is Dave Emery saying thanks for listening.